Welcome to the Elevate Effect, the official podcast of Cedar Hill, Texas. I am your host, Mayor Stephen Mason. As the highest point from the Red River to the Gulf of Mexico, our thriving city is elevated in more ways than one. We will have great conversations with thought leaders and change makers, answer community questions submitted by you, and share important city happenings. Now, we are live from the Poetic Justice Studio at the Trafine Hickman Library in 3, 2, 1.
When we talk about the level of technology, we actually have more than two robots at the hospital. Mm-hmm. We have a Da Vinci robot that's used, the ports that you see for minimally invasive services. And then we have the Rosa orthopedic robot, and then we have the HIFU robot.
Welcome to the Elevate Effect, where we spotlight the people and ideas that are shaping Cedar Hill and beyond. Now, when we think about healthcare, most of us think about doctors, nurses, but behind every hospital is a leader responsible for navigating the big picture, improving access, strengthening community partnerships, and guiding a team of professionals through one of the most challenging and fast-changing industries in the world. That kind of leadership requires compassion and dedication. And today, I am honored to be joined by someone who embodies all of these. Michael Stewart, the president of Methodist Charlton Medical Center. Michael brings over 20 years of healthcare leadership to this role, along with a background in mechanical engineering, an MBA from UT Austin, and 4 years of service in the U.S. Air Force, where he rose to the rank of captain. Today, we are dividing into what it takes to lead through the change, how to stay grounded in your purpose, and what you can learn from Michael's story. Whether you are leading a team, growing a business, or simply trying to make difference, making a bigger impact in your community, Michael, welcome to the Elevate Effect.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm really glad to be here and humbled by the opportunity to participate in your podcast.
Well, first of all, before I get started, allow me to be able to say thank you for your service. You served in the U.S. Air Force. Before transitioning to healthcare, what lessons or values from your military experience still guide you to lead today?
Well, thank you for your service also. And public service is just as needed now and as ever. From the military days, so I grew up in a military family. My biological father was a preacher, so I'm a PK, and then my stepfather was military. So in that, I learned the Army side of things, and then I went into the Air Force. And both the Army and the Air Force are about service before self. So really making sure that you think about the bigger picture, your fellow man. You know, there's a movie, we were talking before this about the times we came up, and there's a movie quote that says, "Am I my brother's keeper?" And I truly believe I am. I think we all are responsible for looking out for each other. And so service before self is something that I learned from the military. In addition to that, excellence in everything we do, right? So if you're going to do it well and do it right. And then lastly, understanding that when you think about another movie, I like to reference movies. There's a movie where one of the characters says, "You need me on that wall. You want me on that wall." And so when you think about the military, you think about people being out there in the cold of night. Nobody knows what they're doing, but they're doing it because it needs to be done. That goes back to that service before self mantra.
Wow. Well, I not only want to thank you for joining the Elevate Effect podcast, but I also want to welcome you to the community. You are entering into, you are approaching your first year in your role at Methodist Charlton.
Now, it's exciting. You know, I've been all over the country, as you mentioned, in non-urban communities in California to big metros like the Miami area, and being here and what I'm still learning what to call it, the southern sector, the southern part of Dallas County. It's just been great. And the welcoming, you know, I've been in a lot of places where I've kind of had to prove myself first. And then people are like, "Oh, he actually knows what he's doing. So we're going to line up behind him." Whereas here, I feel like the whole community is kind of rallied around the hospital and the leadership team that we put together to really ensure that we're doing our part to support all in this community. And so it's been a great time.
Well, I like to call this region the best Southwest area.
Yes.
And allow me to be able to say on behalf of the whole best Southwest, we always value the partnership with Charlton Methodist. We have a long history with them. A lot of the Best Southwest success has also been a pillar because of Methodist Charlton. So hope you learn to feel that with all the other cities that's from around the surrounding area. But before I kick things off, I want to kind of just dial back for a second. Do you recall the first time that we, I guess, say formally met?
Ooh. I'm hoping it was a time members of the Best Southwest, the mayors, got together to welcome me at the hospital. I don't know if were you there then? That's the time I'm thinking of. And it was like my first day or second day here at the hospital. And that's a demonstrative. I'm talking about the welcome, right? To meet all the mayors in this community, or most of the mayors in this community, my second day here, and the fact that it was an impromptu meeting. It just, I remember going home being like, wow. Like, they're really excited about what we're going to bring to the table. They want to partner. They want to be part of the growth that's happening here, specifically at Methodist Charlton. But they also want Methodist Charlton to be part of the growth that's happening down in the Best Southwest. And so I just love that. And as I think through that, it's just the start of a very symbiotic relationship. Now, I don't know if that's the time you were referencing.
Well, you know, I don't know if I would call that formal. We met you, but we did meet during that time. And I hope you really embraced the connection.
Yeah. Now I remember the person. Was it the cereal drive?
It was the cereal drive.
Yes.
So just so everyone know, I was invited to attend the cereal drive at Methodist Charlton. And our food pantry, Cedar Hill Shares, was invited. And they was there to be able to receive so much from Methodist Charlton. And there was actually a lot of the staffers, mm-hmm. I guess administrators that was there for Methodist Charlton to be able to say, hey, not only do we want to give you, cereals and other resources, but we also want to be able to, you know, try to promote it and be able to make sure that everyone feel welcome mm-hmm. to be able to receive these resources. So that is when we met. Mm-hmm. But following that meeting, we actually went to your office and then we actually got to know each other
yes.
a little better. Now, I don't know about you, but it's not every day that the president of a hospital will ask me to come into his office. So I want to let you know that I remember that, and that really means so much to me.
Now, it was, as I reflect on the cereal drive, one of the things that I love about Methodist Charlton is the fact that the people there are compassionate and empathetic. And so if you recall that cereal drive, we had so much food that we ended up giving not only to the Cedar Hill pantry, but to other pantries in the community, because we had such an outpouring of love. And I was like, man, I didn't have to go out and, you know, grab anybody and say, hey, let's go spend some extra money to make this look decent. It was just an outpouring of love. And then the love that you shared. And that was our first like official like get together. You got up, said a few words. I said a few words. And I was like, we got to get together. We got to break some bread. And so, yes, good times.
Yes, sir. So what Methodist Charlton, for those who are not familiar, in your own words, can you share what it
is? So Methodist Charlton is a consummate community hospital. We've been here 50 years. And when you put that with our Dallas counterpart, that means only Methodist has been in the Best Southwest and caring for the Best Southwest for almost 100 years. And as I alluded to earlier, the men and women at Methodist Charlton are compassionate and passionate about taking care of this community. Most of us live in this community, so I like the phrase, it's FUBU, right? It's for this community, by this community, and it's us taking care of our own. And one of the things I'm happy to say is it's second to none with regards to the technology, with regards to the protocols, to the certifications. I'm doing town halls now where I kind of get feedback from the staff, and in it, I'm sharing with them some of the great things that they do day in and day out. Because as you talked about, healthcare is tough right now. The amount of noise in the system, sometimes incivility. People come to us when they're broken, when they're hurting, and so they may not always bring their best representative to the conversation. And so in that, letting the staff know that they do a fabulous job there. I mean, when I look at the targets that are given to me from an executive standpoint, we're targeting being top quartile in the country in every category. I'm happy to say in a lot, we're already there. And others, we're well on our way. And so, there's just a lot going on there. And so that's what makes Methodist Charlton. And when you think about all the other hospitals out there, each of them are tied to one particular city, right? I mean, when you think of big hospitals, they're like, oh, such and such, this city, such and such. And I love the fact that I get to interact with a bunch of different communities that span the socioeconomic spectrum, the political spectrum, the religious spectrum, the age spectrum, and then again, a consummate community hospital.
Michael, So it's a little joke we got, right? Because, you know, I'm just a habit of just being short and keep it going. So he doesn't go by Mike, he goes by Michael. So if you hear me put an emphasis on Michael, then hopefully all the listeners understand why. As a matter of fact, you know, my first name is Stephen. So I'm not going to allow him to call me Steve. He's got to call me Stephen. But I digress. You have held leadership roles across the country, from California to Florida. What was it about Methodist Charleston that made you say, this is where I want to be?
Well, let me start with the fact that my children are getting older, and I wanted them to be in an area where I felt like they could be safe, where they could be heard, where they could be productive. And so in that, we started looking at different areas. Fortuitously, I got a call from Methodist. And I had made a mental note probably about 10, 11 years ago. I met a leader from Methodist Health System, and that if I ever got a call from them, that I would entertain that call. And so I got a call this time last year, actually, from someone at Methodist. And so I reached out to a couple contacts, and I was like, okay, this is legit. Like, Methodist is continuing to grow, continue to do their thing. And then I was like, okay, which facility? And then it said Methodist Charleston. And I was like, wow, okay, I've never been in the Southern Sector, Best Southwest, but let me go check that out. And the moment I went into the facility, I was like, this is home. This is where I'm supposed to be. This is where I want to be. Had a chance to tour the facility with the board chair at Methodist Charleston, and he was relatable. You didn't mention, but I'm a member of Kappa Alpha Psi, and he's an alpha. And so we were having a conversation about Greek life, and it just flowed. I mean, as all the facilities I've been to all around the country, this was one that just felt like home. And then as I met more and more of the team members, they were hungry for that next level opportunity. And so I was just blessed to have the chance to come here. And as I spend more and more time, I thank the Lord for the opportunity to come here and help make a difference and help people be their best version of themselves. And that's what I feel my role is as a leader, is to support, encourage, vision cast, and elevate.
Well, wow. Love it. Elevate effect. So for our listeners who are still just trying to figure it out, what advice would you give them in finding a career that feels purposeful and truly fulfilling?
So there are a lot of things I can say for people at different phases of their career. I think when you're a junior, you definitely need to do, actually the whole career, you need to do more listening than talking. But when you're a junior, really taking the time to listen, to understand the whys, the hows. I tell young people, make sure that you're not in the back seat of the car when you're a junior, right? As you matriculate and get more sophisticated in your career, then you want to make sure you're the driver. Because even if you go the wrong direction, that experience you have from driving, and you know, I've done some flying in jets, and the only thing I can liken it to is when you're in a jet, you have to know the plane, you have to feel the plane. And so as you're going about your career, if you're not at the helm, at the controls, then you don't know all the nuances. I'm trying to think what's more relatable. If you drive stick shift, those of you who've driven the stick shift, you know that you got a feel for the engine. As the engine revs up, you know it's time to change gears. And so when you're young in your career and you get into that driver's seat, you begin to say, hey, this doesn't feel right. It's time for me to change. But ultimately, what I would tell people is make sure whatever you decide to do, that it's what you want to do. And what I mean by that, sometimes when we're young, we do things for the money. We do things for the title. We do things for the fame. And those things aren't going to bring you happiness. I'll relate a story. I was CEO of my first hospital around 30, 31. And once I got there, you know, kind of looking from the mountaintop, sort of say, I'm like, okay, why did I push so hard? Like, really, what was the reason for me to want to be in charge of an organization at that time, 700, 800 employees? Like, why would I want to do that? And I didn't fully understand at that time. At the time, I realized, you know, you just want a title. You weren't about helping people. You weren't about the experience. You were all about, you had told people you would be in charge and you want to be in charge. Well, after I thought through that, I realized the real reason why I wanted to do it was to have that impact. That's what matters when we talk about, you know, the numbers in your on your tombstone, that dash. You want people to remember kind of that you helped them be their best version of themselves.
Yeah. So earlier you were saying you want to be more relatable. Are you saying that mayors can't have a jet? We can't ride in a jet?
No. I'm talking. So not riding in a jet. When I was in the military, I had the great opportunity to be in the back seat of a jet every week in preparing for pilot training. So I'm talking about actually flying the jet, not riding in the jet, right? Because it's a lot different flying in a jet versus a Cessna, right?
I wouldn't know about that, but I think I can relate now. So, you know, we often talk about hospitals are places for healing. And you're right. Usually whenever someone comes to a hospital, it's not on their best day. But there are also major employers, hubs of innovations, and community anchors. How do you view the role of hospital president beyond the walls of medical center?
So when I was junior in my healthcare career, I had a chance to meet the CEO of one of the largest healthcare companies in the world. And he told me, he said, Michael, in a lot of communities, people know the mayor, the police chief, and they know the head of the hospital, because that's the role the hospital plays in that community. If there's a disaster, the hospital's in the middle of it. From an economic standpoint, if you think about any community and the patients that go into a hospital, a large percentage of those patients are Medicare, Medicaid, or some version thereof. So that means there's money from outside the community, the federal government, coming into that community to pay the salaries, the vendors, and all that, right? So you have the multiplying effect of that money, and you're in the business of this, so you know it's 4 to 11 times you want money to circulate in your community. When you have that money coming in via Medicare or Aetna or United, whatever the insurance company, that money is now in that community to circulate. So it helps them. And then from a fire response standpoint, from a police response standpoint, so we're involved from that aspect. And then we also, a lot of times, are the middle class of the community. So our nurses get paid a great wage. Our doctors make a great wage. Our therapists. And so that's a middle class that drives housing, that drives school, that drives humanities for a community. So if there's a part of a community that hospital doesn't touch, that'd be news to me, because we are integral in the success of a lot of communities. And unfortunately, because as you pointed out at the beginning of this, healthcare is under assault right now by so many different areas. There are communities that are drying up because their hospitals close. And I'm just glad we're in a community that we have vibrant healthcare.
Yeah. Here in the North Texas region, we are in a thriving, you know, region. You know, I haven't brought this conversation up to you, but I think it's, you know, prevalent to bring up right now. So I was on the council for 9 years. I thought I had the blueprint. I thought I could figure it out. You know what? The opportunity for mayor is coming up. let me throw my name in the hat. You know, got elected in 2019. Next year, one year later, we had a pandemic. Mm-hmm. I thought I had a blueprint. I thought I, you know, knew, you know, at least seen our experience on a council layer level, that I kind of have an idea about what to expect. But I had a relationship with your successor. I'm sorry, the
predecessor.
And because of, I was able to be able to make contact with the hospital to be able to help me get an understanding about what is this pandemic. I guess you could say pandemic or epidemic at the time. It was pandemic. It actually helped me communicate to my community about what happened. As a matter of fact, it was right before spring break. I'm sure everybody knows the timeline.
March 2020.
And, we actually had a meeting with superintendents and mayors on the call. And before I even had reached out to the hospital, the question was, do we need to, you know, close the following week? So we was out on spring break. I think Duncanville was about to go into spring break. And, you know, I was the one that actually said, hey, you know what? We got, you know, people who left for spring break to go to another country to vacation, who probably has contracted it, don't know it yet. So, yes, I think we probably need to take, you know, some time out. But it was also the dialogue that I had with the hospital, because then at that time, whenever the not the injections, the immunizations. Mm-hmm. When the immunizations became available, we was able to form a schedule, you know, at the hospital parking lot. We was able to communicate the, you know, with the nurses about how to be able to do the drive-throughs. Mm-hmm. But I had to communicate to my community. So I had to reach out to my stakeholders. I think I had enough information that I need to be able to know that, hey, we're actually going to shut down. Nobody knew what that meant in real time. But just think, a rookie mayor, you know, going through a pandemic, having to be able to have a contact in the hospital that can be able to give me enough resources for me to be able to lead in my community was so vital in that time.
Well, that actually goes to also what you asked about, what is the role of the hospital leadership team? I won't just say the president, the whole leadership team, and that's to partner with the community, right? So it's because of those relationships, the relationship you and I are building, that in those times we can just call and pick up a phone and say, hey, give me the real skinny. Similar story, but the reverse. I actually held a meeting the Friday that all broke in where I was in my last community. And we had the schools, the county leaders, the city leaders, because it wasn't as big of a community as this one. And we were at the epicenter of what was going on from a public health standpoint and clarifying and getting rid of some of the nuances of information and always throughout that, especially that first 18 months. I mean, we were on the phone regularly. I actually hosted a call every week where anyone could call in a leadership position, and we had doctors on the line. I had other team members on the line to talk logistics, as you pointed out, the vaccines when they came out in December of 2020, and just talking through that. And so that's one example, but there are a lot of examples, whether it's tornadoes. I mean, I remember probably 7 or 8 years ago, there was a tornado that hit I-20, not that far off of I-20, right? What do we do in those time frames? I've been in communities where hurricanes. I mean, I was in one community in South Florida where because we had backup generators, the line for my cafeteria was down the street because we were the only ones who had power. We had, food coming in. And so we were feeding the community. It was a majority Haitian community that would come through my hospital and get their breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And so I say all that to emphasize the critical nature that hospitals play in communities and how important it is that we partner with not only the political leadership, but the economic leadership of that community to make sure that we grow the symbiotic relationship.
Wow. So underneath your leadership, you have the opportunity to be able to market the 50th year anniversary of Methodist Charles.
50 years.
Here in our area. Any insight or what we got to look forward to?
So we were just talking about this last week about when our big events. Right now we're looking at a big event sometime around mid-November. Kind of a VIP 4 to 5 and then a 5 to 6, 7 event. We're still in the planning stages for it, but throughout the rest of the year, you're going to hear us talk about 50 years. I mean, you were here 50 years ago, so.
I wasn't. Not quite 50 yet.
Okay. Your dad was here 50 years ago. And if you think back to what this community looked like when you were 10, it's a lot different.
Right.
The makeup of our community is a lot different. And the makeup of Methodist Charlton is a lot different.
Yeah.
We just opened an ER 2 years ago. We're seeing over 90,000 patients in our ER.
Right.
That puts us as one of the busiest ERs in the country.
Yeah.
And people don't really have an appreciation for just how many of the community members come through on a regular basis looking for us to help them either with their quality of life or get answers to questions or concerns they may have to start their life.
Right.
And then, unfortunately, people do transition their lives at hospitals, and we want to do that with dignity and respect, too. And that's what we do at Methodist Charlton.
Now, you said ER. You are my understanding, you are the second busiest ER in our region. And Methodist Charlton is not a county hospital. Typically, a county hospital, typically you get those ERs. There are many hospitals around here in the North Texas area. But we are the second busiest. I got a little stat for you. It's my understanding, underneath your leadership, the national survey was customer satisfaction, patient satisfaction was in good standing. I'm not sure what the levels are. Financial strength was strong, and I felt like there was another one. And I want to say that I don't think we ever had all three or four levels to be in good or above good standing. And this is underneath your leadership. So you want to toot your horn a little bit?
Done your homework. And so first of all, I want to give credit to the team members there, right? And so for my job is to kind of show them where the bar is and then support them in jumping over that. And so what you're referencing is, like most executives, we kind of have a scorecard that we look at that looks at a number of metrics, both from a qualitative standpoint, a quantitative standpoint, some financial. And so from a patient experience, the expectation that Methodist as a system has is across the board, we're in the top quartile of the country. And so what you're referencing is recently we jumped into that space. on a number of our targets. And then, you know, on that scorecard, we were all green. And we had a leadership meeting, and those who were alumni of Tarleton, those who were affiliated with Tarleton, those who were at Tarleton, would come up to me and be like, "We're so proud. Like, this you know, hasn't happened under our time here." And I'd say it hasn't ever happened. But what I will also say is, like you, you stand on the shoulders of the people who came before you.
Right.
So I can't take all credit for that. That is, you know, when people talk about outcomes, it takes sometimes years to get to it where does. You are today. So I right. want to give credit to my predecessors, for the executive teams that were there before. And we just happen to be at the when we break through. And so we're really excited about that. But what that ultimately means, though, is that the community is trusting us more today than they did yesterday.
Yeah.
Right? You don't get to 90,000 ER visits. You don't get to top quartile performance if the community didn't trust you. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad to see, hear, and support the fact that the community is finding favor with Methodist Tarleton.
Amen. So, you know, it is, you know, not only to the credibility of the institution, but there's been a lot of investments that's been going on to Methodist Tarleton that I don't think really gets really talked about. You know, what are some of the biggest trends people should know about, and how is Methodist Tarleton getting ready for what's next?
Yeah. So first, I talked about earlier, over $60, $70 million investment in a new emergency department. It's one of the best in the country. I mean, I've been all over the country, as you talked earlier, and I've never seen an ER this up to date. It's 70 beds, right? There are hospitals that are 70 beds in total. Mm. And we have an emergency department that's 70 bed. Again, 92,000 ER visits. Right. In January, we rolled out the ROSA robot, which is an orthopedic robot. It helps with alignment and making sure that patients are able to get in and get out with minimally invasiveness. And in next 2 weeks, we have what's going to be a HIFU, high-frequency ultrasound, that treats prostate cancer. And for us guys, everybody get your prostate check. Right. One of the things, or one of the challenges in that, sometimes the treatments cause erectile dysfunction, mm-hmm. right? And from a manhood standpoint, that people are like, I don't know about that. Well, this HIFU will allow us to treat certain types of prostate cancer. And because of the nature of it, it results in not having erectile dysfunction, mm. right? We're in the first ones in the Dallas-Fort Worth area to have this capability. And then we just look forward to, I want to build a new tower. Mm. We have that ER. I think I've shown you pictures of what that would look like. Yeah. And so if the community continues to support us, we want to kind of tear down the old and build upon the new.
Right.
And so those are significant investments by Methodist Health System in the best Southwest.
Yeah. You know, I was hoping that you was going to bring it up, but I'm actually glad to put it out there. But it's my understanding that we're the only one, I think maybe in all the state of Texas, that we have two robots.
Yeah. So we have a lot of organizations have robots. And so I don't want to say we're the only ones. I will say we have two robots that not everyone. So the HIFU I talked about earlier is we're the only ones in the Dallas-Fort Worth today. Now, there are a couple other systems that are right on our heels.
Okay.
But when we talk about the level of technology, we actually have more than two robots at the hospital. Mm-hmm. We have a Da Vinci robot that's used, you know, the ports that you see for minimally invasive services. And then we have the ROSA orthopedic robot, and then we have the HIFU robot. And then there are a couple other pieces of equipment that we're bringing into the southern sector. And so, but I think all of the hospitals in the Dallas-Fort Worth area are somewhere along that continuum of having some type of robot-assisted surgery. So I don't want to say we're the only ones, but when we talk about the southern sector, we're it. Mm. Right? I mean, what's between 20 and, you know, loop 9?
Right. So just so I could communicate with the listeners, because I don't know myself. Mm. So when I hear that you have these robots, these are actually robots who are conducting the surgeries to assist? Are they?
They're assisting. They're assisting. So we don't have artificial intelligence. You know, no one's coming and say, "Mayor Mason, welcome. You know, let me start cutting on you." No. These are pieces of machines that assist the surgeon. There's always a surgeon that's leading and that's taking, that's doing the surgery, but they're robotic assisted surgeries to help with the accuracy, the angles, and the placement of the equipment.
Wow. So I don't even think I even seen this on TV. So I don't know if we need to have like a Methodist Tarleton's MD reality show, let me patent it first before you do it.
Understood.
Finally, what is your why? What gets you out of bed in the morning ready to lead and make a difference?
Well,
as I think about that question, from a professional standpoint, I have to interplay with the personal. So I have a 10-year-old son and a 7-year-old daughter, which you've had a chance to meet. And as I think about the world that I want to leave them, I think about me doing what I can to make it a better place. And so my calling is healthcare. And so when I get up in the morning, I think about them and making sure that they know that their dad did everything he could to make the world a better place. Then I think about the staff at the hospital, the ones that are there in the 11th hour, putting in the extra effort, having the conversations with people who, as we talked about, aren't always in their best position, but they know that they've got to be the one to go above the fray and do what's necessary. I had a story just told to me today about a truck driver just literally drove up to our dock a few years ago. And the driver got out and said, "I need help." And this dock worker, who's not clinical at all, was like, "I got you," right? And did everything he can. The guy ended up having a heart attack. Mm. And we saved his life because he got him to the emergency room, got him connected with the right people. And that truck driver, he said, has come back 3 times to say thank you.
Wow.
Right? And so that's what gets me up in the morning. Yeah. Just making sure that our team has the opportunity to save a life, to make a difference in their life, to make sure that we recently had someone in our hospital who coded in the field, which means they went down on emergency crews where they're trying to do CPR, trying to do defibrillators, but they were gone before they got to the hospital. Mm. But when they got to the hospital, we tried to wrap that family up with love, mm-hmm. right? So much so that our pastoral care person, who I asked, I said, make sure you talk to that family. She got invited to speak at the funeral because that family was just so appreciative of us having team members there to wrap our arms around them and just hold them as they lost one of their family members.
Right.
And so those are the stories that I'm like, wow, when it's tough, when the days, I deal with budgets, I deal with regulatory environment, and all I gotta do is walk the hallways.
Yeah.
And I see the men and women in Charlton doing everything they can to help someone make it back to their loved one. Mm. That's a mom, a dad, a brother, a sister. And that's what gets me fired up.
Wow.
We are truly blessed to have you here in our community. Appreciate everything that you have done. You mentioned earlier that you go to town halls. Are you doing town halls? You know, I don't know if I necessarily got invited to one, but just to go beyond that, the fact that the president, right, you can have anyone on your PR team, you know, to be able to deliver the message, but you yourself personally is doing the town halls, or at least leading the town halls. You know, that really means a lot. And then, you know, lastly, you know, we had a party in the park, a community event in our community. I invited you, but you went beyond and even invited your family to be able to come and fellowship with us. So, you know, I appreciate it. You know, you're vested into our community more ways than one. Thank you again for giving us your time today.
My pleasure. And just for clarification, the town halls this time are for staff.
Oh.
And so that's why you didn't get an invite.
That's no problem.
But we definitely do some forums. As you know, in August, we have the legislative days at the hospital. And based on this conversation, we will look at maybe doing some public forums also so people can come and see and hear about all the great things that are going on. And again, thank you for what you're doing. I had it, my first event that I attended was Juneteenth last year.
Oh, was it?
At the park. You didn't know I was there.
No.
But no, my whole family, we were ziplining it down. And so we've been to a lot of the community events where there's the Christmas lightings that we went to. You know, taste of whatever's. I mean, we go to a lot of events because it's for us, by us. This is our community.
There you go.
So thank you again for hosting this podcast.
Yeah.
And thank you again for your service and your leadership. You don't just get to become mayor without people believing in your vision. And I look forward to partnering with you and the other leaders in the community of making the best Southwest the best that it can be.
Yeah. Well, together we can do it together, right? Michael, thank you for sharing your journey and vision with us today. It is clear that you bring more than just the experience. You bring a purpose, integrity, and deep sense of service to the community. Cedar Hill is lucky to have you leading one of the region's most vital health institutions. Your Thursdays are about to get a whole lot tastier. Food Truck Thursdays are happening every week at the Signature Park in Cedar Hill, and they'll be running all summer long. From 5 to 8 p.m., you will find a rotating mix of local food trucks, everything from burgers, tacos, to sweet treats. and international flavors. It is a great way to grab dinner, spend some time outdoors, and support local vendors. If you haven't stopped by yet, you are missing out. I invite you to come check it out. Don't miss Cedar Hill's first Motown in Downtown street dance on Saturday, April 26th from 6 to 9 p.m. in historic downtown. Enjoy live music, dancing, food trucks, beer and wine vendors. Bring a lawn chair, your friends, family, and enjoy a fun night out in Cedar Hill. Visit the link in the show descriptions for more details. Now it is time for one of my favorite parts of the show. It's for me to be able to answer questions submitted by you. By the way, for our listeners, be sure to visit the link in the show descriptions to ask me a question. You may see your question or me answering your question at the next show. So Ella asked, is there a piece of advice you got early in your career that you still live by today? Thank you for that question. So I had to take over my dad's business. He passed away over 25 years ago. I was still in college and I decided to go to continue my dad's legacy. And I remember a good buddy of mine's, Mr. Lucius Williams, who I still claim as my mentor today. He told me that it doesn't take a genius to run a business. It takes common sense. And I'll tell you, that was just the encouragement that I needed. And I, you know, don't want you to think that I just took common sense and ran my business, but it gave me enough confidence for me to be able to, you know, stable the ship. And from there, I still continue to get my education. I still use my work-life experience. I still was able to be able to enhance my abilities to be able to lead my organization. So thank you for the question. Next, Brent asks, what is one mistake you made early in your career as a business owner that taught you a valuable lesson? I think one of my biggest lessons, because when you're a business owner, you get, you know, you get a lot of lessons learned. I want to say one of my biggest ones is do not make a decision based upon emotions. So if something comes up, you know, I would advise you to be able to just take a moment, be able to reassess the situation and then revisit it before you make your final decision. So thank you again for tuning in, and hopefully I'll be able to hear a question submitted from you. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in to The Elevate Effect, where we are raising the bar on leadership, community, and connection. See you next time for another great conversation. And always, I will leave you with this. It is not the art in making money, but it is in keeping it. Save wisely, invest smart, and build generational wealth. See you next time. Thank you.